Yes, sir. Let's freaking go. New guest alert coming up here in about 10 minutes, Mr. Joe DeLeone, I believe. I want to talk about new players. And this is a question that I ask each and every one of you. Are there more great LSU returnees on next year's team? Or will there be a majority of LSU's top 15 players? Will they be first-year players? I am including true freshmen and transfers. So basically, if you are a member of the class of 2025, who will make up a majority of your best players? Now, that sounds like something that's not good, that first-year players taking up a good chunk of your roster. But this is where we are in all sports. First-year players run the roost. And normally you have a good idea of who a player is by their first year. So on Patreon this weekend, I will be releasing a study on do returnee players that weren't that good, do they actually get better during the course of their LSU careers? Now, obviously, I do not judge true freshmen harshly really at all. It is really difficult to play Division I Power 4 college football as a first-year player. And in theory, now with the transfer portal, you're getting more proven commodities, and you're honestly just getting older players. Age matters at this juncture of your career, okay? Now, this is where it gets interesting. I believe of LSU's best players, most of them will be first-year players. I really do believe it. Now, you do have your Garrett Nussmeyers, who, you know, is a really, 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 really good football player. Then you have Aaron Anderson, who you also know is someone that you could trust to, at the very least, give you good production next year. We'll see if he could be an elite all-SEC level player next season. You feel pretty good about Chris Hilton. You feel pretty good about Trey Des Green. And then you go to the other side of the football. You feel pretty daggum good about Whit Weeks and Harold Perkins, even though they're coming off injury. There are guys like Gabriel Relaford who are rising. But do you feel good about anybody in the LSU secondary that's returning to this team next year? Are you sure that Devon Keyes is that guy that could be that third linebacker off the bench? He played pretty well towards the end of the season as a true freshman. And then you go to the other side of the football. There are quite a few players that struggled mightily last season as they played, not necessarily out of them being great, but out of necessity. And that is a completely different thing. Nobody really cares where you come from now in the college football era. Nobody. You're either you're good or you're not good. And with revenue sharing being around the corner and players pretty much all earning six-figure salaries, roster caps being at 105, there are going to be harsh transactional discussions with every single player on the team. And this is very important to note that this will be the first mercenary year under Brian Kelly, where they really did go out there and spend to get the big transfers that weren't coming home to take a hometown discount. They went out there and got transfers that are getting recruited by really good programs that we know have won tough NIL battles for transfers. Josh Thompson, in the minds of many, was someone that you have to beat out for Tennessee. Okay? So, pretty excited about tonight's show. Joe DeLeone is joining us. We're going to talk a lot of NFL draft. And we're also going to dive deep into Will Campbell and his draft profile and the other LSU Tigers that potentially could get drafted. Now, I say all of this because one surprise has happened during camp. I don't think it really shocks a whole lot of you that a can't-miss five-star true freshman like DJ Pickett is a really good football player. I also think a lot of you viewed a guy like Jack Pyburn really highly, a guy like Patrick Payton really highly. And in particular, Pyburn has made a lot of noise throughout camp. Mansoor Delane, the same thing. And then on the other side of the football, I do think we feel pretty good about the likes of Berrien Brown coming in and making an impact. Harlan Berry, even though he's a true freshman and not a transfer, he's younger, you feel pretty good that he's going to make a few explosive plays next year as a first-year player. But the guy that has shocked many is Sadir Mitchell. And this is what I want you to take away when it comes to transfer portal evaluations. And I want to talk about a guy who a lot of you are familiar with, Jack Besh. So why did Jack Besh transfer from LSU? Does anyone know why Jack Besh transferred from LSU to TCU? It's not because he disliked LSU. It's not that at all. He didn't dislike Jaden Daniels. He didn't dislike really anyone on the team. Now, I can't say that a gazillion percent, but I know Jack. He's been on the show before, and you know, I've not really talked to him since he's been at TCU, but there's still quite a few PHLers from his appearance on the show that still talk to him and are still big fans of his. And I'm still a big fan of Jack Besh. I gave out an autographed Jack Besh helmet a few weeks ago. But the reason Jack Besh left is because Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. were ahead of him. That's it. That is it. And Kayshawn decided to come back, but then he didn't decide to come back. And then you still had Mason Taylor in the equation. So Jack Besh was a true freshman, tight end, hybrid wide receiver. He played a lot as a true freshman and produced a lot as a true freshman because Cole Taylor wasn't good. And we didn't have anyone else on the team that could play tight end. So we made him a hybrid tight end, and he outproduced every other true freshman on the team. Then, obviously, they tried to make him a kickoff returner. He fumbled and so on and so on. But this is not a Jack Besh rant. He left because elite players were ahead of him. Two all-time great NFL rookies. Two all-time great LSU football players. And a guy, before he got hurt, was producing at a higher level than those two all-time great players in Kayshawn Boutte. All three of them, productive NFL wide receivers. That's why Jack Besh left. There weren't any targets. So why does that matter when discussing someone like Sadir Mitchell? The same thing is true at Texas. Now, there's more to it. What happened to him at Texas? Obviously, he had a very close connection to Bo Davis, and that's why he came over to LSU, and Bo Davis goes to the Saints, and all of that. But the reason he did not play at Texas wasn't necessarily because he wasn't good himself. He transferred because Texas is loaded at defensive tackle. They've got really, 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 really good football players that play on the defensive line at Texas. That's why he transferred. Alfred Collins was arguably the best defensive tackle in the SEC at times last year. Well, that's not arguable. I mean, it just was. 98 was a good player. 15 was a good player. It was hard to play. And the year prior, there was two guys that went in the first two rounds. So when you evaluate any transfer, I heavily ask the question, who was ahead of them? Because even though Sadir Mitchell wasn't all that great at Texas, it wasn't necessarily because of him. There were so many good players ahead of him. It is so important to factor that in with a transfer. Because normally, what I preach is the reason why you transfer is because you aren't any good. That's the main reason. You're not good. And you're just going somewhere else. And that's why you didn't produce at your last school. But each player is a case-by-case basis. So do I think Sadir Mitchell is going to be the second coming of Tyler Shelvin? I don't know. But even though he wasn't one of the top five transfers that LSU brought in, and he came in with not so much fanfare, you know, one thing he has that the other players have don't have? 330 pounds on his body. The SEC is a force equals mass times acceleration league. It's physics. It's physics. In the NFL, everybody's big, everybody's fast, but there's also some of the absolute most talented players at their craft that are able to survive in the NFL. Aaron Donald wasn't the biggest or the fastest, but his technique was absolutely flawless. You could say the same about Jason Kelce. In the SEC, oftentimes it just comes down to, are you the biggest and the fastest? It's just that simple. How are you athletically? Sidhir Mitchell is a human freaking being. We are just human beings. He is a human freaking being. He's a big dude. Hard to move those guys. And I think he's going to provide a lot of oomph to our defense. Now, this is where it gets very, very interesting. Is that he has kind of become the shiny new toy. He had a small little nick up in practice. He's fine. I've asked two different people who are way more plugged in than I am. One that actually is in the building every day. They told me he's okay. I hope that's true. You guys know I'm not insider guy. I don't like, and in particular injury stuff, I like to keep close to the vest. But I do think he's going to be fine regarding that. But dude, I like having meat. You don't have to pause me on that. I like freaking blubber. Chunk. I'm a chunky guy. I've lost some weight lately. Been on that Blake Ruffino carnivore diet, baby. Let's go. But I like chunk. I like size, baby. I like it. Sidhir Mitchell gives that to your defense. But I say all of that because Jacobian Guillory is hungry. He's not hungry. He's hangry. He's coming back with a vengeance as well. And this offensive tackle room is weird. You return two true freshmen, one of which was the freshman of the year on defense, and is now with this defensive line coach. That defensive tackle room has a lot of question marks, but you feel a lot better about it with a guy like Sidhir Mitchell in the fold. Now, coming up next, I want to discuss NFL quarterbacks. I have never seen a chat light up with a non-LSU NFL topic like it did with the most mercurial player in this NFL draft. We'll talk to a guy that actually breaks down the All-22, the guy that does his own rankings, a familiar face. You're absolutely going to love him. He's coming up right after this to tell you if Shedeur Sanders is indeed the real deal.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I gotta show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 spin booth experience serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. All righty. So, Joe DeLeoni, Shedeur Sanders, when you hear that name, what comes to your mind?
Man, there are so many different things that I could probably talk about here with Shedeur Sanders. I think polarizing and also high floor, those are the first two things that come to mind, which is the complete opposites when we talk about typically with quarterback prospects. When guys are polarizing, it's because the really high ceiling, they're exciting, got so much potential. But Shedeur Sanders' film is not as flashy as I think people might expect with the way that he generates so much attention off the field.
New Orleans Saints quarterback Shedeur Sanders, if that were to happen, How does he fit in with them? And would you make that selection?
I absolutely would. And the big part about this with Shador is that I don't feel certain that he's going to be there on the board. I feel I'd be pretty shocked if he was still available. I think it's going to require a trade up just because of the fact that this draft class has so many limited quarterback options. It's going to create a lot of desperation. It's going to create a lot of freakouts by front offices that badly need to get a quarterback. But if he does end up there at the 9th overall pick, I think that's a home run. You end up having your future at quarterback without having to start him. That is a concept that is approached and desired by every single team, that they don't have to rush a rookie out there, that they don't have to throw a guy to the wolves and hope that he can perform well enough. I don't really know what we're going to get with the new offensive scheme and what to expect truly once we transition away from Derek Carr with the Saints. But I would think that the accuracy, the timing, the touch, the just elite decision-making, everybody who's talked about Shador Sanders, who knows him personally, has talked about how his football IQ is through the roof. That is ideal for what the Saints need. And the ability to be patient with him, I think, is such a huge bonus if he is selected at 9th overall by the Saints.
Now, this is where we're going to get sexy. We're going to get feisty. Yeah, it's your first time on the show. Blake's probably talked a lot of shit about me behind my back. I totally get it. I'm sorry you got to deal with them. I got to deal with them once a week.
Right.
But, okay. What a lot of my viewers want to happen is Doug Nussmeier, who's a quarterback coach of the New Orleans Saints, they want the Saints to select Garrett Nussmeier for the 2026 NFL draft. So before we start getting into that, what are your thoughts? Let's just say Garrett Nussmeier were to come out in the class of 2025. And I know you already got your big board, all that stuff, but where would he fit in? Would he be the QB3 behind Sanders, or would he be your QB2?
He would be QB3 still for me. And I think that I haven't graded and evaluated him the same way that I've done with Cam Ward and I've done with Shador Sanders. But you see the arm, and you see the highlight plays that he's able to produce because he has a very natural arm. His father was a quarterback coach. You just mentioned him. When you have a quarterback coach as a dad, it's going to help the technique, the throwing motion. It's going to feel just so easy for a guy like that. But the decision-making is really inconsistent. And I think that it's not to Garrett's fault. It's not to his fault that this year that they didn't establish the run effectively at all, and they had to throw the ball way too much, and that led to him forcing things. And when you're throwing the ball 35, 40 times a game, at a certain point, when a defense is dropping into coverage or they're just sending unlimited pressure, knowing what you're going to do every single snap, knowing that the ball is being thrown every single play, it makes things really hard for a guy like Garrett Nussmeier to not only make good decisions, but also to learn and improve and to evaluate and actually become a better quarterback. So a little bit of that is on LSU, but I would have placed him at third because there's the opposite ends of the spectrum. It's, do I take the guy who's got the weaker arm but has the much higher decision-making and is a much more consistently accurate player, or do I take the player that has the higher ceiling that has the smooth throwing motion, the strong arm, the big playability, but makes a lot of concerning, questionable mistakes? My biggest thing with Nussmeier, though, I'm so glad that he went back, because him going back gives him one more season to really hone in on some of those problems, and then for the whole LSU offense to take a step forward and to improve. This is that opportunity for him to take a huge jump and potentially be the first quarterback selected in 2026.
All right, so let's go back to Shador. He is selected earlier than pick 9.
Mm-hmm.
You believe that? You would lean towards that happening at this juncture?
I would, and I think that you got to look at who's picking in the top 10. I don't even really think that anyone outside of the top 10, like hovering around there, is going to try and trade in, just because the only team that really fits that description is the Steelers. But in the top 10 alone, in the top 5 alone, we start with the Cleveland Browns, who are in a total awful, messy situation with Deshaun Watson's contract. They are trying to move on as quickly as they can. They owe him a ton of money. It's killing their salary cap. Having a cheap option that maybe they don't need to rush out there in Shedeur Sanders, that is exciting for them. That is an exciting option, and it's one that's been considered and projected for a while now. It also was one of the earliest things that you heard coming out of the combine is that the Browns are strongly considering taking a quarterback this year. They really liked Cam Ward, and they're not going to get Cam Ward. Then we move to the Giants. The Giants are in even more of a desperate situation because Joe Shane, Ryan Daboll are on their last chance to save their jobs. John Mara, the owner, was pretty clear about that during the offseason press conference as soon as the season ended, basically saying that like they got to turn this thing around. The only way that you can buy yourself time that we've seen is drafting a quarterback, him going out there, showing some impressive things, and then maybe people realizing, all right, let's be patient. Let's allow them to build something around it. And then outside of that, the Jets are on the table, probably not as likely. And then I think the other next available team would be the Raiders, who have Geno, very similar circumstance with the Saints, where they're paying him for a couple more years. He got this new contract extension. I believe it's 2 to 3 more years. So you don't have to rush out Shedeur Sanders. And then eventually when you feel he's ready, you start him and you play him. So there's just too many teams, I think, in the top 10 with no good quarterback options, with a huge cliff fall off with Jalen Milroe and Jackson Dart as day two prospects by most people. I think that the NFL is not going to force it, and they're going to try and, you know, see what they can get with Shedeur rather than taking those chances on Dart or Milroe.
All right, so let's go to Jackson Dart. Ole Miss, huge Saints fan base. There's been some steam with Dart and the Saints. Do you think he could go ninth if the Saints want to get reachy? Or do you think he even... let me just ask you that at first. Do you think that's something that could happen?
I'm not buying it. And I think the biggest telling sign of him capably going in the first round, the green room invites are more telling than people typically realize. Jalen Milroe was invited. Unless I miss something, Jackson Dart didn't receive an invite. The amount of invites that they're giving out this year are a lot less than they typically are. So if there is a guy who does go in the first round as the third quarterback, I think it's going to be Jalen Milroe. This whole buzz and buildup for Jackson Dart feels like the Will Levis buzz and buildup. It feels like that draft class a couple of years ago where we had Kenny Pickett and Matt Corral, another Ole Miss guy, Malik Willis. And it was all these projections like, oh, bad quarterback class, but where we could still see three in the first round. And then there was literally one. And then there was this huge gap of time until that next one came. It feels like media fanfare rather than actual NFL buzz and desire. It just feels like that there's a lot of media members that like the tape, and it's not really backed by many NFL teams that share that same sentiment.
Yeah, I would be furious if the Saints drafted him. I just don't.
You should.
So we're on the same page, and you made me feel a lot better about life itself with you putting us ahead of Dart. Would you put Jalen Milroe ahead of Dart? And there's been some Milroe and Saints kind of murmurs, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that Milroe, first of all, I think that Milroe is a better option on day two. I think that if he does go to the Saints, it probably would be in the second round. I would still I would probably put him even. Now, I'd probably still put Nussmeier just ahead of Milroe, but they're still like day two-ish guys. Again, without like having like a true grade for Nussmeier, they're in that same general ballpark of traits, talent, but inconsistency in the decision-making. I think what makes Milroe so exciting for some teams, and this is a copycat league first and foremost, knowing what Jalen Hurts just did, where wasn't considered like the best decision-maker coming out of Oklahoma and Alabama, was not the cleanest passer, but was just a big, strong athlete. Eagles take him. Work him in sub packages. Eventually he becomes the starting quarterback. They just mold the offense around him. They really bulk up and build the offensive line. The rest is history. They got the two Super Bowls. They won one of them. I know that there are a lot more steps in between there, but I think that the NFL can see the ability to win with a tremendous athlete that maybe isn't as poised as a decision maker in difficult game situations, but surrounding him with the general roster to set him up to succeed is something that teams are probably going to try to recreate. It's easier said than done, but but it wouldn't shock me that a team wouldn't think like, wow, let's try to get our own version of Jalen Hurts here.
I think the Saints definitely do draft a quarterback. So if that were to happen, who's your favorite potential second, third, maybe later round sleeper?
Two guys that I think I'll give one that's a day two guy and one that's a day three guy.
Okay.
I really like Tyler Shuck. First and foremost, by the way, Jalen Milroe is QB3 for me. Jackson Dart is QB5 for me. Tyler Shuck is QB4.
Oh, don't tell me you're a Shuck guy. What the?
I'm not like a, you know, going crazy for Tyler Shuck. I'm not that guy, but you see the arm talent, and he also tested really well at the combine. He's a big, strong athlete. The thing that's really weird about him with his tape, if he was 22 years old or even 23 years old, I'd say, I'm in. Sign me up. You develop him eventually, maybe as a second, third round pick. He starts for your team in a couple of years. That sounds like a great plan, but he's 25. And for some context, I'm 26. I haven't played college football in 4 years. And he is still playing college football, and he's just finishing up right now. The age is a little weird because if he needs to bake a little, he needs to cook, he could be 27, 28 by the time he actually starts to hit his peak. And that's way too late for me. You know, that is a really long time to wait. And then, you know, he's going to be in his 30s, almost in his 30s by the time he gets that second contract. But if you're a team like the Saints here, where finding your new quarterback is a multi-step process, you already have a sitting starter in Derek Carr. You start Carr the entire year. You have Shuck sitting around. If you're not satisfied with the results in the development, he ends up being your backup for a long period of time. He almost would have that same age of a backup for 2026 that's been around for a while, that's experienced when you're going to pick a quarterback in 2026. So I think it's kind of like, you know, low cost, decent reward option for them. And then on day three, I don't think that this guy goes on a start. But I see potential if he ends up in the right scheme. I was pleasantly surprised by Dylan Gabriel.
Let's go!
I wasn't expecting that response. I was not expecting that response.
Let's go, Dylan.
I feel like so many people either hate Dylan Gabriel or they're like all in on Dylan Gabriel. And I'm suddenly one of those people that's all in on him. He's great decision maker and his arm's stronger than people realize. Like these little guys sometimes at the shot, put the ball off their arm to generate force. He's pretty natural. And we saw already Bo Nix stepped into the league. And, you know, the offense that he played in at Oregon was not translatable, but his instincts were translatable. I think if Dylan Gabriel, there was a random, totally, totally unexpected player that goes on to start for a team or start some games for a team, Dylan Gabriel would be my pick.
Let's go, Joe. I knew I would like you.
I wasn't expecting that response.
I have been Gabriel'd, if you will. I mean, they're going to start calling me Fluffy. They're going to start calling me Iglesias. I don't even know any other famous Gabriels. I always cheer for my fellow short kings at QB. It's hard as hell. And I like the fact that I get 5+ years of starts. You look at the quarterbacks that are young and successful in the NFL. They play a lot of football. Now, you could say the same about Dart. He's got 3+ years of starts and all of that. But Gabriel was successful in 3 different offenses. I get a little bit of rushing mixed in there. He's not an elite runner, but I like red zone running. So let me ask you this. I mean, do you think he could be an effective red zone, if I need to punch it in, kind of runner?
I don't know if I'd necessarily call on him to do that. But my biggest projection with him that I think is so perfect is if he got drafted by the Dolphins. And I know this is like, it couldn't be any lazier Hawaiian left-handed quarterback. But if we talk about the tools, he's lefty. You don't need to worry about like having a righty backup and a lefty starting quarterback with Tua. And Tua is so injury prone. If he ended up being Mike McDaniel's version of Brock Purdy, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked.
Okay, so two more for you. Riley Leonard, Will Howard do you like either one of those?
I was admittedly, and I'm a Notre Dame guy for anyone who listens to Rufino and Joe. I was admittedly a little disappointed with both of them. I was really thinking that Will Howard, I was going to go in watching his tape and see, you know, the prototypical big body, strong, physical, athletic quarterback. Like maybe he could be a weaker armed Josh Allen backup for a team, but his arm is below average. His ball placement is really not as good as it looked on TV. Like there were games where you watch him and like, wow, he's in rhythm. He's, you know, national championship game. What, he completed like 17 straight passes. But when you watch the tape, you got guys readjusting to the ball and moving all over the place. So like, it's just not like a supernatural. He's not a supernatural thrower. That's what's like really awkward with him. I think he'd stick around as a great backup, but I don't really see him eventually becoming a starter like some people bill him to be as like a sneaky starter. Riley Leonard, though, I think some sicko, i.e. Sean Payton, is going to draft him and turn him into Taysom Hill. I legitimately do. Anyone who watched Notre Dame this year knows that man has awful deep ball accuracy, touch, all those things. He's awful at throwing deep balls. He is decently precise, the intermediate to short, but he throws his body on the line more than anybody I have seen over the last 5 years. And I just know that Sean Payton is just waiting. He's going to be waiting patiently for like the fifth round. And if he goes earlier than people expect, because he wants to turn him into Taysom Hill, I wouldn't be surprised.
Let's talk Will Campbell. Is he your OT1?
He's not. And I'm afraid to say that on this, cause I know I'm going to get yelled at.
Hold on.
Let me defend myself.
I
think that he is the highest floor offensive lineman in the entire class. I think that he is, if I had to pick one player in this class that like I know for certain goes on to have a really steady, consistent, reliable, all pro career, multiple year all pro, multiple pro time pro bowler, I'm totally fine with that. I just don't think it's like a guarantee that he's a tackle in the NFL. And I've argued with this with Blake all the time. We did this with Peter Skoronski. Peter Skoronski had amazing tape. He was coming into the NFL. Everybody thought that like he could play tackle. He got moved into guard. He played guard. Similar requisite tools, traits, build, arm length, all of those things. He could certainly play tackle. I think it just depends on the team who drafts him. To address if anyone's wondering who OT1 is for me, it's Josh Simmons. I just think Josh Simmons is so natural.
Out of Ohio State?
He had the best tape at the beginning of the year before he got hurt. He was awesome. I see people are telling me to get out of here. That's brutal.
I like Campbell.
I have nothing against him.
I can hear out our man Mimbu because he's a freak of nature. But
I also think he's a guard. I don't think he's a tackle.
Okay.
So he's on the shorter side.
Okay. All right. So let's break down the Will Campbell thing. All right. What makes you think he is more so a guard than a tackle at the next level? Is it the arm length thing or what is it?
It's quite literally purely the arm length thing. But I think that when we have this conversation, it automatically comes off as if it's some sort of a knock. Like it always comes off like, oh, I'm talking negative of him. Like I even, his offensive line coach even tried to like dunk on me on Twitter because I was tweeting about this. And I think that having the flexibility to play multiple positions is the most valuable thing that you can be capable of doing as an offensive lineman. I'd rather be able to draft a guy that can play right tackle, left guard, right guard, than a guy who I wouldn't feel confident moving into guard or any of those things. There are a lot of teams right now that have uncertain offensive line situations, and I think Will Campbell would be perfect for them. That being the Patriots, that being the 49ers. I mean, the Saints are even a really good example. Like if the Saints drafted Will Campbell, what spot does he start at? I wouldn't be upset at any spot that you lined him up at because I know that he would automatically become one of their best offensive linemen in a year. So it has less to do with me saying he's not a tackle. It's just me saying that I think he has the flexibility to play multiple roles. And if his arm length ends up being a problem, he would be an awesome guard if he had to make that transition.
Okay. So I've done a few of these mock drafts, and I could see a world where Mimbu is the first offensive tackle because of the athleticism stuff. Now, I don't dive as deep into it, but I do my own rankings and all that stuff. And full disclosure, I'm a Will Campbell fanboy. Everyone knows that. One of his people reached out to me, and we might be doing something coming up. So I'll share that. I'm not going to be able to as objectively like grade him as like some of the other LSU guys. I just know to not bet against that guy. It's just one of those things.
Right.
I really do think he's a real deal. I understand the arm length thing. I understand all of that, but you know, it's just hard for me to just not think that this guy's going to be a Pro Bowler at the very least. Let's talk Mason Taylor really quickly. You know, Blake and I got into a shouting match about because I like Colston Love.
Shocking.
Yeah. And then Tyler Warren is his guy. You know, I don't want to really quickly. Who do you like better out of those two?
I actually have Colston Loveland over Tyler Warren right now.
Good.
It's just the vertical threat ability is hard to come by, and his route running it's not as refined, but his transitioning is unreal. I think both are going to be great players. I would draft either of them. It just depends on the scheme. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I'm a big Warren guy. Loveland has just grown on me. You know, every cycle there's a guy that I see the other analysts talk about him like nonstop. And Loveland's grown on me, knowing what he had to deal with you know, crappy quarterback play in Michigan.
Right.
But Mason Taylor is interesting because if I'm a team, I'm like, well, I don't want to use a first round pick on a tight end if he's not Bowers. So I can wait till the second or third and get someone like Mason Taylor or the Arroyo kid out of Miami who quite a few people are high on. So is Mason Taylor your tight end three? And do you think he would be a good round two or round three pick?
He's my tight end four right behind Arroyo, who you just mentioned. And I think that it's just a slight separation. Arroyo has some of the just most fluid athleticism for a tight end that you can find. I think that he's going to be a day two pick that just ends up being super reliable. Maybe doesn't turn into a top five tight end or top 10 tight end, but just ends up sticking on a team for a long time because he's just a really good after the catch weapon and a vertically challenging tight end in the league. But Taylor, I really liked his tape. And I think that this tight end class isn't as good as some people are projecting it to be. I feel like a lot of people are making this tight end class out to be like it's, you know, it's filled with future starters. I think Mason Taylor is one of the few guys that I would draft second or third round that I would feel confident starting for my team. And I think he shows some well-roundedness. I think he has some great route running ability. He had pretty good reliable hands this year for LSU. I would feel pretty comfortable if my team ended up picking him. And I'm a Giants fan, for example. If the Giants picked Mason Taylor, I'd feel pretty happy with that selection because I could see in a couple of years' time him being a 700-yard tight end in the league for 4 or 5 years.
You're not a Theo Johnson guy? Go hop on.
I don't know. I feel like he's all – well, so here's the funny thing about Tyler Warren. Ryan Roberts, who I do A to Z Film Room with, one of the YouTube channels I work with, right when Theo Johnson was getting drafted, I texted him. I'm like, watch this Tyler Warren kid, who was the second tight end behind Theo Johnson. I'm like, go watch this Tyler Warren kid. He looks pretty good. I wonder what Kotelnicki does with him. And he ended up obviously exploding into the player that he is now. But no, I like Tyler Warren before I liked Theo Johnson. Theo Johnson's a good athlete. I just don't know if he's a good football player.
If you got a question for Mr. Ruffino and Joe Show, because he has to carry the weight over there, fire it in. A few more for you. Any other LSU players? Because obviously those two have kind of separated themselves as far as the NFL draft is concerned. I mean, I know there's three offensive linemen, all of which went to the Senior Bowl: Emory Jones, Miles Frazier, Garrett Dellinger. Mm-hmm. Is it them, or is it some deeper cut guy that interests you at all?
Yeah, the one guy that I'm surprisingly high on compared to everybody else, and his pre-draft process hasn't been super sexy. It has not really lived up to the hype, and the Senior Bowl performance by him wasn't great, is Emory Jones. I liked Emory Jones coming into the offseason, or coming into the season, and I liked his tape after the season. I know that there wasn't that jump and that improvement that everybody was hoping for, but I just love the physicality that he plays with. I love that physical presence and the ability for him to just clamp down on defenders once he locks on the inside of their pads. I think that he's got the power to become a really, really good guard in the NFL. He just doesn't necessarily have like that redirection ability to stick at tackle. I think once he does make that transition by like year two, I wouldn't be shocked or stunned if he goes on to becoming a quality starting guard for a team. Maybe not like a, high level plus starter, but just a reliable starter for a team that needs one.
How'd you become a Notre Dame Giants fan, says PHL legend TJ?
Well, it's actually more common than you'd think. I'm from New Jersey. I live in New Jersey, but I grew up in New Jersey. So hence the Giants fan aspect of it, like 30 minutes away from the stadium. And I'm a Notre Dame fan because my dad went there. I really wanted to go there. I ended up opting to focus on playing football in college. I played football at the University of Rhode Island, which is an FCS program. But that was the randomness of how that came to be.
Yeah, when I was doing some research, I didn't know that that you played at the Fighting Lamar Odoms. that's awesome. Did you think Joe Burrow's hands were too small?
No, I didn't think Joe Burrow. I got into this with Blake yesterday when we were talking about Will Campbell's arm length. The hand size thing for quarterbacks is only brought up for guys that are under 9 inches, and I don't think he was 9 inches. And the only reason why it's brought up is that there's a general just. Not Matt, you don't drop a guy because he's got little hands. It's just a general slight concern of like, hey, he could have ball security issues. If there's no ball security issues on film, we don't care about it. But if a guy keeps getting stripped and he has small hands, that goes on to the scouting report. The arm length thing for tackles, you could get away with being a really nuanced, technically refined offensive tackle with short arms at the college level because for the most part, you're going up against either athletic freaks that don't have good hand fighting technique, or you're going up against guys that aren't super athletic that do have really good hand fighting technique. So a guy like Will Campbell is able to win despite him not having longer arms. He can still succeed in the NFL by knowing how to still win despite not having that length. But when you're facing off with Myles Garrett and you're facing off with eventually Abdul Carter, all of these guys that have ridiculously long arms in the NFL that are freaks of nature coming off the ball, it can lead to guys not succeeding out at tackle and instead being better on the inside at guard. Again, it doesn't mean anything to me that I don't think he's going to play well in the NFL. I think he's going to be a great pro. I just think that there's a capability for him to play well at either position.
Here's my favorite thing about Will Campbell is this guy through his 3-year stretch went up against one of the craziest murderer's row of ends. His first ever rep just happens to be versus Jared Verse, as you're well aware. And my favorite thing is the dude never gives up on a rep. He could begin bull rush, be in a quarterback's lap, and then reset. Man, I've never seen anyone do it quite like him. But once again, I don't break down all the tackles as closely as you do. There are some offensive tackles that I see people have rated similarly to Will, and I'm like, I don't see it with Kelvin Banks as much as many others. And I do see the vision with Mimbu as well.
Right.
The dude is just a freak. But it is what it is. Now, general question. I have Travis Hunter so far ahead of everybody else, including Ward, Abdul Carter, including Will. What say you? Or do you think it's... do you think it's close with him and Abdul Carter, who I think is slightly overvalued? Slightly.
There's a couple of, or let me rephrase that. There's a very small number of blue chip guys in this class.
Okay.
And I think that the guys that fit the category are Abdul Carter, Mason Graham. I think Will Johnson's in there, but he's not getting the recognition for whatever reason. Coming into the season, Malachi Starks was in there, but his season didn't totally live up to the hype. But Travis Hunter fits into that bucket for me. He is my second highest rated prospect at the current moment. He's my number one receiver. He is my number one cornerback. Okay. He is one of the most instinctual players on both sides of the football that I've ever seen. I think he's a corner in the NFL because NFL teams, it's harder for them to find elite starting corners. Not good starting corners, elite starting corners. He would be a perennial all-pro. He's that good. There are so many times on film where you watch him at corner where the ball is getting thrown and then you see him and he's 3-4 yards away from the receiver that the ball is being thrown to. And you just think to yourself like, oh man, I wonder if he's going to make the tackle here. And then he bats the ball down or he picks it off. And you're thinking like, how the shit did he teleport upfield that quickly? He does some crazy things. And I think he could be OBJ in the NFL as a receiver, but I just don't think he's going to be able to do that as often. And he's going to just be every couple of series here and there because it's so hard in the league with the attention to detail required in film analysis on a week-to-week basis to be able to succeed. It's going to be too hard for him to split time in meetings. This isn't like in college where everything's all spaced out because you got class, you got stuff, you got it going on during the day. People are meeting at different times. It becomes a full-time job, and it's just going to, I think, be a little bit too much. Not that he can't accomplish it. It's just there's only so much time in a day for him to be prepared.
I am like pro taking a quarterback number one overall, even if he's not quite it, because he just gives you so much upside. I'm throwing that aside. I think the Titans should take Travis Hunter for a few reasons. Like, let's just say he is able to do both sides of the football. Then he's Shohei Ohtani. I would want to fly to Tennessee to see that in person. I don't think, because like I grew up listening to like my dad saying, you weren't around in the Ray Nietzsche era when, you know, when they're playing both sides of the football. And for those that know, he was a Packers player who played on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. But if he is able to pull this off, like he becomes the biggest draw in the NFL for me. And I'm just like, we've never seen this.
Right.
So I guess I'm just blind to it because I do watch a lot of NFL. The NFL has become a bigger part with Power Hour NFL. Am I crazy to think he can actually do this?
I don't think you're crazy, and I'm curious to see if he can actually accomplish it or not. It just the biggest thing with him is that they'll find ways to make it work. Coaches are creative, yeah. Just like they were doing at Colorado, that they were like calling in the routes and telling him what he had to run. It wasn't like he knew exactly what he needed to be prepared for. They found a way to scheme around every single snap of him knowing what route he was running. It all comes down to this could really like halt if he gets hurt. It's just like with Shohei. Like Shohei he has to get Tommy John. He still bats, but that affects if he's going to pitch
right
in a season. Yeah. You know, it completely halts what he's able to do. There's just a general wear and tear that happens just because a player is so natural that they're able to do both things doesn't mean that physically their body will allow it. But I agree with the one thing that you brought up, though. I think that he would be the biggest draw in the NFL. I'm hoping that the Giants take him if we miss out on Shador Sanders, because him in New York, in one of the biggest sports markets in the world, I think that he would go from being loved and just enjoyment to watch to the biggest name in all of sports. Yeah. I think that he would skyrocket.
It would just be so like it would just be jarring to see someone doing that at the NFL like every yeah. week. I root for extraordinary. Like I just want to see it. Now speaking of extraordinary, you know we're up against it here with you. Let's go through your running back rankings. You know that's a big story. The best running back class ever. Some have said. So you're in agreement, Ginty's the top guy.
Yeah, I'm not in this random wave of people saying that Omarion Hampton is better than Ginty. I love Omarion Hampton. I think he's the next Marshawn Lynch. I think he is going to be a bruising presence. He's explosive as hell, but Ginty's a home run every single time he touches the ball. Like that is hard to come. There's only like three guys in the NFL that fit that description: Saquon Barkley, Bijan Robinson, and then soon to be Ashton Ginty. There's guys that are physical, like Derrick Henry, who are a dump truck to tackle and are really reliable and consistent. But to be a home run threat every single time that you're given just a little bit of space to make somebody miss, that is incredibly valuable, and it's something that Omarion Hampton doesn't have.
Okay, so let's run through your running back rankings. You could just bullet point it if you want.
Yeah, I've got Hampton at 2. I've got DJ Giddens at 3 from Kansas State. I really like, dude. I think that he's reminds me a lot of Le'Veon Bell.
He has kidding me?
Such great patience. He tested really well. He's really explosive. He navigates traffic really well, which is hard to come by. I think that he could end up becoming like this player that goes on to be just a 1,200 yard rusher consistently for a team because he's just so easy moving, you know? And I think after that, I've got, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head who I have. I believe I have RJ Harvey. RJ Harvey's at six for me. I'm pulling this up really quickly because I want to be able to actually speak on who I have in what order. Number four for me is, go ahead. Ask me.
Keep going.
Four for me is Caleb Johnson from Iowa, who's another player who's got good vision, strong. He's got some decent burst. Not as patient of a runner as Giddens is, which I give the nod to him. And then at five for me is Trevion Henderson, who's a spark plug every single time he touches the football. He's another guy who's not the same level of home run threat of Ashton Jeanty, but I think that he's going to succeed in a committee-style situation where he's on a team that's got the big bruiser. Like the Texans would be a really good team for him, where you've got Joe Mixon, who's going to grind you out early downs, and then you bring him on a third down, or you bring him in different circumstances, and then he can pick up a 15, 20-yard gain when you scheme him a little bit of space. And then I'll throw out I've got 15 guys graded, but I'll throw out two more guys.
I really like
RJ Harvey, who's a bowling ball, who tested tremendously at the combine, who will run through people, run around people, he'll juke people out. And then I also really like Damian Martinez from Miami, who I think is incredibly undervalued. He's RB7 for me. A massive, strong, wide, picks up speed in a hurry. Another player who run through you. He is somebody who's got that build to withstand a ton of hits in the NFL.
So for people that don't look at this shit every day like I do, but you do it as like an actual job. I'm not as draft-centric as you are. Having those names ahead of Cam Scadabo is ridiculous to me.
He's number 10 for me. He's number 10, by the way.
Ahead of Dylan Sampson, who I like a lot. I have been Dylan Sampson pilled, and I understand the Tennessee popcorn offense, but they had two offensive tackles that were absolutely not so great last year. I know one of them, so I won't call him out, but I've grown into Dylan Sampson, even though Jalen Wright burned me really bad last year. I'm with you on Damian Martinez. That's my guy. Actually, Damian Martinez is my RB5. I freaking love me some Damian Martinez.
He's a great player. To address those really quickly. Scadabo doesn't have the top gear, and I always bring this up when somebody says I'm low on Scadabo. 2 years ago when he was at Sacramento State, when I was doing work for a scouting agency that recommended prospects to agents, I brought him to the table as a guy that we should have recommended. It was ended up being shot down, but I at the time was saying that like he was going to explode and he was going to be a dominant college running back. And once he got to Arizona State, and I thought that once he gets the opportunity in the NFL that he would stick on a team as a second or a third running back. He is so hard to take down. The contact balance is tremendous. Yeah. He doesn't have that top gear. He's a 4.6 guy basically when he runs. Sampson, I'm out on. I'm sorry. I got to be straight with you. You mentioned the popcorn offense. He's got like these dump truck sized rushing lanes that he's running through. That's why he's my last ranked running back at the current moment.
Last? The 15?
So of the 15 guys that I have actual finalized reports on.
Share the other names that are on there.
Judkins is at 8, Kyle Manungai is at 9, Cam Scadabo is at 10, Devin Neal is at 11, Bashal Tootin is at 12, Ollie Gordon is at 13, Taj Brooks is at 14, and then Dylan Sampson's 15 for me.
Mm. No Jordan James love? No.
He's fine. He's a good player. He'll go in the third round. Day three. I mean, he'll go late day three.
One guy that I, and you might not, because this guy is so far off the beaten path. So I'm weird because we shared a Jack Besh story earlier. Mm-hmm. I keep up with all the LSU transfers. I'm kind of weird. If you don't go to Alabama or Ole Miss, I'm going to cheer for you. So you go to TCU, I'm going to cheer for Jack Besh. One guy that is just so interesting to me is Corey Kiner of Cincinnati. Okay, so kind of in your region of the country. NFL build. He doesn't have that top gear that you just mentioned a minute ago. But Corey Kiner is so interesting to me. I don't know why I think he could do something in the NFL. Or am I off base?
No, I don't think you are. And I've watched his tape. I just when you're going through so many prospects, like you don't end up having like a finalized report on everybody. I'm like trying to finalize as many as I can this last week before I close the book, before the draft actually starts. But I really think that for what you just described, he's a hard runner. He's somebody who just does all the little things that you're looking for. Yeah. That a player like him sticks on a team as a third running back and starts to earn opportunities to get more carries by his second season. So I don't think you're off base at all. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being a quality player for a team.
Make sure you go follow him on Twitter. You guys know where the Ruffino and Joe show is. And bang, there you go, Jason Alexander. Oh, you're a Yankees fan. Okay, that makes sense.
I'm actually not a Yankees fan. The hat's just randomly there.
Oh,
I just have the hat. The hat, somebody gave me the hat, so I just put it there. I'm not in my backdrop. I'm not actually a Yankees fan.
But a Seinfeld fan.
Oh, yes. I love Seinfeld. That's the reason for the header.
A show about nothing but a draft analyst who's about a lot. Make sure you go follow him on Twitter. I know you got another spot coming up. I could talk to you about this all day.
I mean, this was the quickest 40 minutes, 45 minutes that I thought that we had another 30 minutes to go. This was a blast. Yeah. I appreciate you having me on, Carter. We got to do this again soon.
Yeah, buddy. We'll do it soon. Okay. All right, buddy. Cheers.
Thanks.
I wasn't going to ask him about PHL legend Slade Roy. Now, I would have been interested because he's a long snapper. So I should have asked him that because I saw it on his Twitter bio. Maybe I meant to give him some good life advice right there, because there's a gazillion draft analysts out there. And it's going to be hard for Joe as he goes on his NFL draft journey to get up there with the likes of Todd McShay and Mel Kiper, if you will. So what if Joe just quit doing the entire NFL draft thing and just ranked long snappers? That's it. Niche down is what they always say in the YouTube streets. Niche down. Niche down. Niche down all the way. Good evening from Sri Lanka. TJ wants to talk some Brian Kelly. I wasn't going to talk like any like current LSU stuff because I wanted to focus mostly on the draft because he's an actual draft analyst. I love the draft. It is honestly my favorite thing. The NFL draft is my favorite thing because I'm a big NFL guy. Not all of you are big NFL guys. And obviously all of us are big college football guys. And you're meshing both of them. And I do think there is a big segment of LSU fans that do not give a shit about LSU players when they leave LSU. And that is perfectly fine. In fact, I think it's a healthy thing to do that, because you keep the main thing the main thing. It's hard to have your tentacles everywhere, keeping up with every single player that transfers out. But guess what? I've kept up with Corey Kiner. He was good. He's been very good since he's left LSU. Very good. I think he could play in the league. I do. I like Corey Kiner. All right. So Akeem says Scatabu will be out of the league before his 29th birthday. He's Peyton Hillis. He's too physical for his own good. His body won't hold up. Well, guess what, Akeem? If I were to ask an NFL GM, hey, the running back that you're selecting in the third round will have a Peyton Hillis career, every single NFL GM says yes. Every single one of them. I heard my wife sigh in the background. She loves Peyton Hillis. She's a hog, remember. Peyton Hillis is on the freaking cover of Madden. You're telling me if I draft Cam Scatabu, I'm getting Peyton freaking Hillis? I'm taking that all day, every day. Now, he had one elite, elite, elite year, and obviously his body broke down. I will say, the last time Peyton Hillis went viral, I would not go read that story if you don't have a tissue handy. You will cry, especially if you're a dad. You do not want to read that, okay? Because I think some of you are Googling Peyton Hillis, and like that's the first thing that pops up. He saved his drowning daughter. Saved her. And him sharing that's not what you want to hear. Unless you're built that way. I'm not even a dad. I can't listen to it. It's that sad. He's a brave son of a bitch, but if it's your kid, And you're going to do what you're going to do. I like Cam Scataboo. I do. I really, really, really do. Now, what's funny is from a football card perspective, he has the second highest prices of any of the running backs, behind only Jenty, of course, because you guys know I buy and sell football cards and try and flip them based on my own evaluations. Now, I shared and had Joe on the show because he's an NFL draft analyst. If you want to use all this knowledge to win $50,000, go sign up now with Fast Draft Fantasy. That's it. Fast Draft Fantasy. It is the cleanest fantasy football draft app that I've used. And you guys know, I love some of the competitors. I freaking love Underdog. But when it comes to the usefulness of the app, Fast Draft Fantasy, dude, for a startup that's not been around for a while, holy crap, dude, they are clean. So please go sign up. Use my promo code Carter. They have rookie-only drafts where you draft six rookies, no positional limit, and you score the most points, add a few multipliers in there, you can win $50,000. And my number one rookie that I'm selecting is Damian Martinez, the running back out of Miami. I think he is so good at actually playing running back. Between the tackles, that is my style of running back. Now, obviously, from a fantasy perspective, you want the home run hitters. So, Bashaul Tootin out of Virginia Tech. Maybe we can get Mansoor Delane or Braylon Moore to tell you about him. That kid is a firecracker. He's good. But if you want to give me a bruiser between the tackles, nuanced runner, Damian Martinez is my guy. I feel like I'm watching James freaking Conner when I watch him play. Yeah, Chance, I keep up with the Louisiana guys. Like, I cheer for Keon Coleman, even though he abused us. He's from Opelousas, man. I have a lot of friends from OP. But I will say this. I will stand 10 toes down for Will Campbell. 10 toes down. I have learned to not overthink guys like him. Because the arm length thing has been nonstop. I think athletically, if I were to just blindly pick an offensive tackle, I would probably select Armand Mimbu out of Missouri. He's really freaking good. His upside is really freaking good. It feels Teron Armsteady, if you will. Dude is an absolute monster. Will Campbell's the best offensive lineman in this draft. And I would love for him to get selected by the New England Patriots and rejoin the likes of Kayshon Boutte. Will Campbell's the best tackle in this draft. And in this draft, he is my number two overall rated player. Now, like we alluded to a little bit earlier, we might be getting to do some Will Campbell stuff before the draft. And I would love to. You guys know how much I freaking love him. Ty Christiana, who we have teamed up with quite a few times, is one of Will Campbell's autograph reps. He told me so many Will Campbell stories. You guys know I freaking love that guy. There are some dudes that can just play tackle football. Will Campbell can play tackle football really well. It's just that simple. Some guys are just freaking good. He's good. Let's go to John. Hey, Carter, any idea where John Emery will end up? So let's talk about John. And this isn't a criticism of John. It is not a criticism at all. And I don't want anyone to take what I'm about to say as a criticism of John Emery. Number one, we don't know if he's going to be eligible. And number two, throughout John Emery's career, there's always been an ambiguous surprise question mark, whether it's things that are out of his control, which is his health, or things that are within his control, which is obviously academics, suspensions and whatnot. All right. One thing that's very fascinating and left out of the John Emery discussion is actually an overall macro college football discussion that we had earlier today about Sadir Mitchell. College football, because of its roster limits, you can have an unlimited amount of players at pretty much any position that you choose to allocate your resources towards. So some teams have 7 scholarship defensive tackles. Some teams might only have 5. Some teams might have as many as 9. But where it gets really interesting is like a position like running back. You know, if you play wide receiver, it is so tough to figure out your touch allocation. At running back, it's a little bit easier. If you're not the number one or the number two guy, you're probably going to look for work elsewhere. So why do I bring this up with John Emery? Well, we kept bringing John Emery back. Kept bringing him back. And finally, this past season, it worked out. It worked out. He blew up versus USC, and unfortunately, he got hurt. Nothing you could do about that. But what if, instead of the touches and the resources and us wanting John Emery to be the guy, let's just say before the 2021 season versus UCLA, John Emery was out of the picture altogether. Who probably would have stayed? Corey Kiner. Corey Kiner probably would have stayed. Now, his running back coach was Kev Falk, and there was a change, and some of you know the story. So Corey Kiner might have still left. He might not have still been as good at LSU as he was at Cincinnati. But anyone that actually watched him at Cincinnati, you could see, hey, an NFL team's about to draft him. He probably would have been a good player at LSU. So the reason why I bring this up about John Emery is, yeah, it was fun to finally see him turn out to be something. But every single player that's on the team, and in particular at running back and at positions that you actually touch the football, players are more likely to leave. The transfer portal data backs that up. So unless a guy is a superstar, you have really got to ask yourself if this player is somewhat difficult to deal with, or you have to worry about their eligibility or their health or anything like that. You got to ask yourself, is it worth this guy and all the effort we put into going after him? Is it worth it? Is it worth it? LSU had to fight tooth and nail and really spend a lot of resources, time, energy, effort in recruiting DJ Pickett. He, like John Emery, was a 5-star recruit. He wasn't in the top 5 national 5-star recruits, but he was kind of in that range. Guess what? DJ Pickett looks like it was worth everything that we had to work for, and I think we're going to get 5-star production out of the deal. I really do think so. It was worth everything that we had to put into that recruiting effort. It really was. But one thing as far as a roster building standpoint, and if I was hired by an NFL or not an NFL, college football front office, and my dream, of course, is to work for LSU football as an analyst or Austin Thomas's right-hand man, I would always ask myself the question, is this guy worth it? Is it worth it? All right. Now, it was worth it in a sense. Like Chance points out, we don't beat Auburn in Auburn in 2022 without John Emery. He made some big, big, big freaking plays in that game. Made some big plays versus Alabama. And I'm not saying he was a net zero. But there were some good running backs that said, look, I don't see a path forward if there's still this 5-star ahead of me. Now, I say this because I do think, from a college football standpoint, that fans have not fully adjusted to doing a cost-benefit analysis of every single player that you're recruiting. So the biggest story in college football today was kind of out of nowhere. Nico Imalieva of Tennessee, his camp leaked something, or Tennessee leaked something, to Pete Nakos, the On3 transfer portal reporter. And he said that there are still negotiations going on with Nico and his camp and with Tennessee as far as him getting more money. Remember, Nico was the guy that got Tennessee potentially in some trouble with the $8 million booster flight visit. And the report reportedly say, I don't have an On3 subscription, but someone sent me a screenshot that said, hey, did you know it was them saying that the market has changed? Quarterbacks are worth more. So if I'm Tennessee, I'm doing a heavy cost-benefit analysis. A Tennessee offense that many feel is plug-and-play. Nico, who had one 300-yard passing game last year, won in a Josh Heupel offense. Now, their wide receivers weren't that great. Like we said a minute ago, their offensive tackles weren't that great. And Dylan Sampson was really freaking good. Nico, how much more money does he want? Is it worth it? We're talking about a starting quarterback in the SEC. But you remember yesterday we were doing a video where Garrett Nussmeier was in every SEC top five list, every college football top 10 QB list. I am not sure if Nico is a top five SEC quarterback. And you want to go back to the negotiation table? Really? What if Tennessee said, see ya? Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? And the funny thing about it is I was Nico's biggest fan coming out of high school. He was my number one quarterback. I had a better grade on him than Arch, than the Dante Moore kid, than the kid that's been a bust that went to USC, Malachi Nelson. That was my guy. Nico's high school tape was that good. I mean, you could see the velocity. You could see the vision. But I'm not sure if he's that good. I am not sure. And there were times, and for those that don't know, Tennessee is the team that I cover the second most outside of LSU. They moved ahead in terms of views per video ahead of Arkansas this past season. So I do a lot of Tennessee. I do a lot of Oklahoma. I do a lot of Arkansas. So I broke down a lot of Tennessee tape. And Nico was not that good. He was not that good. And I feel all this NIL stuff has been a distraction. I feel like there are times where he's not putting in the most to get ready for games. But I read that earlier. I felt like it was a slap in the face. You guys know I'm a Josh Heupel fanatic. I think that guy is so freaking good at coaching college football. I don't know if his style will ever win an Natty, but then again, if you're not at Ohio State, Georgia, LSU, or one of the big, big, big schools, who's going to win an Natty? Yeah, it's so hard to win an Natty. But Josh Heupel took a team with one 300-yard passing game, bad wide receivers, bad offensive tackle play, to the college football playoff. Now, they had a favorable schedule, but he still took them to the college football playoff. and he gives you a popcorn offense to play in, and you want more money? What? Really? Now, I will take Nico's side when the specifics come out, if they ever do show the light of day. If Tennessee missed on a payment that they agreed to, then F Tennessee. But, man, what a headache. I mean, spring ball is towards the end. There's people saying that the NACOS report is just a bunch of fake news or whatever. But if it's fake news, why are you the only quarterback that this has even happened to? Couldn't the same tactic be used by Garrett Nussmeier right now? Any quarterback could do that to draw more money. Any quarterback could. But get your money. Do what you got to do. Eagles have signed Terrace Marshall Jr. This just broke. Let's go, T-Marsh. Get you a ring, bro. And we've gone long tonight. I love a good guess. Now, I do have to say one thing. And you guys know we venture off from the LSU things. If you want to hear my thoughts on Sidorir Mitch, we can go to the beginning of the show. Okay? I want everyone to realize that the biggest story in sports is Caitlin Clark. This next season, it's the biggest story. And Caitlin Clark, to me, is the biggest story. And her and Angel really are so big. Like, I don't think we truly grasp how big of a deal is it that these two in particular are pushing numbers for the WNBA. All right. Now, before that crowd comes after me, I know A.J. Wilson's a great player, Kelsey Plum and all, but come on. It's Caitlin by a wide margin, then it's Angel, and then whatever else. All right. That's, you know, such a big story. I mean, there's so many different dynamics with that. With that said, I went to bed last night having changed my mind on that. The single biggest story of 2025 is a Luka Doncic trade. And I think what happened last night is so freaking important for the NBA. And I would totally lean into it. Because if you really watched Luka's reaction to the Dallas montage and, you know, the fans and all that stuff, he was really sad about it. So it was nice to see an NBA player actually care about where he played. It was ironic that the NBA star who started his career with the franchise who gave him everything in the Southwest NBA division, who took it the exact opposite way, that of course being Anthony Davis, is involved in this Luka trade. I rest my case. But the truth is, that is the single worst trade that has happened in sports and that ever will happen in sports. Russell Wilson doesn't come close to that. Does not come close to that. And that's the NFL. Things change so fast in the NFL. So, whatever. That is the worst deal ever. Nothing comes close. Magic Lakers with Shaq. Nothing comes close to that. Nothing. I don't. It is so unfreaking believably shocking that that happened. And that trade will be bigger than the NBA playoffs itself. And I'm excited about the NBA playoffs. All right. It is so unfreaking believably big, that story. And I do think Luka, in his return, crying that much. And by all accounts, I mean, there's not been any leaks. Normally something is leaked by now that Doncic forced his way out. We wouldn't know that by now. No, he wanted to be in Dallas the rest of his career. I will never get over this trade. I'm not even a Lakers guy. I'm not even a Mavs guy. I'm a Pel. I've shared my connections to this current Maverick team. So there's a piece of me that's mad about that, but I mean, it's whatever, dude. It's the biggest sports story of the year.
Okay.
And there's going to be conspiracy. I mean, we still don't know so many different things. But maybe we got to wait till we're all super old and the 30 for 30 comes out as to who really did it. Was it Nico? Was it the Adelsons with Patrick Dumont? Was it Rob Pelinka? Why wasn't Austin Reeves in there? Man. Jules, it's been a while. Good to see you, buddy. But yeah, PW says, tired of people getting paid so much for average results. NBA's got plenty of that. I know you were talking about Nico, but NBA's got a lot of that, man. Ed says, I think the defense will be a big surprise. And very good. There you go. All right, we went a little long today because of the guests, but
there you go. Special thanks to Joe DeLeon.
And we will be live again Sunday night. Excited about LSU versus Auburn this weekend. Jay Johnson's going to kick some arsh. So we'll recap that on Sunday. Yes!
Power Hour. LSU. Boom.
I see you, Beth Tarina. I see you, LSU Gymnastics. I haven't forgot about you. And tonight, we're doing some mahi-mahi. Let's call.